Ryan Day was back in front of a microphone on Wednesday. So that means on a Thursday edition, a Thursday Thoughts edition of the Podcast Daily, Bill Landis and me, Austin Ward, have some Ryan Day stuff to break down. It's great. He spent roughly an hour on the Morning Juice and Bishop and Friends on 97.1 The Fan in Columbus. So he did not speak with us. He's not on our microphones, but he was talking into one, which in May, that's just exactly what I'm praying for in terms of content. And good for him and good for Ryan Day for doing it, because I think that's one more example that I've been putting in this pile of like signs, Bill, that Ryan Day is doing the CEO part of the job that he's been intending to do for the better part of a year, more than a year. And like this offseason, he's actually, I think, executing that in a way that he has envisioned.
Yeah, I think it is like a very noticeable change in the way he's going about things. And I think at times you can, I don't know, sense a little bit of him still trying to get comfortable with it. But there's no doubt that he is more comfortable with it now than probably he was certainly a year ago, 2-3 years ago. Like this is an evolution. I think that probably needed to happen. In the back of his mind, he's always known that it needs to happen. And like, I'm not trying to make too much about him going on the radio on a random day in May, but certainly it's not something he would have done like two years ago, right? So it is noteworthy, and I think it's good for Ohio State to like kind of have him out there like that, right? It's not that I think Ohio State fans certainly know who Ryan Day is, know what he's about, but if he's going to take on this role now of being more of a CEO and being less hands off in some very specific areas, but I think more hands on generally with everything that is going on with the entirety of the program. And this is another way, I think, of doing that and sort of letting people in on his thought processes when he is doing that. So it's interesting. What will it mean in terms of results for Ohio State in the fall? Like, probably not much. I don't think a radio interview gets you anything when you're trying to go to Eugene to beat Oregon. But if there were, because I was this way, if there were any Ohio State fans who thought this is a step that Ryan Day needed to take and were concerned about his ability to do so, I know I at least have been made increasingly more confident, I think, that like Ryan Day has fully embraced this idea.
Yeah, I mean, there were things that he said during that roughly 1 hour that it's like we could talk about a lot. You know, there wasn't a ton of like depth chart conversation, and I wouldn't expect that in May. There wouldn't be a ton of value for that, although that would have made this episode a lot different especially if he was talking about right guard. But to me, it was like just the fact that he was doing it is what resonates as significant. And as you said, Bill, it does not guarantee anything about what's going to happen on the field in those 12 regular season opportunities in the fall. But I think that these things are important for putting together what the roster looks like. And you don't just get to complain about NIL and not try and create a solution. And I'm not even saying like the sole motivation for Ryan Day to do more media or host more events. Again, like the one that's going to be the Friday Night Lift at St. John on June 21st. Like, and I'm not saying that those things were impossible 2 years ago or that he wouldn't have been willing to do them, but there wasn't the organization in place, I think, from Ohio State generally to go do it. And B, Ryan Day wanted to be the head coach and the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator. And it's like having a life and a family on top of that. And I do think that there's something to carving out this time and making himself more available to the fan base, which I can't empirically prove this. I wish that I could. The people that are giving to NIL until some of this revenue sharing exists, I think, as a fan of other sports, of professional sports, like I'm hoping to get something back. Whether that's a Blue Jackets gave me a backpack one time for being a season ticket holder. Cool. All right, I got something tangible out of it. The crew always gives scarves and a Cucho bobblehead this year. Okay, cool. Like it doesn't have to be like something massive in return, but especially when we're talking about college sports and there's seats are so expensive and give, donate. Like, I think the head coach needs to be more accessible to the fan base. And to a certain extent, the players do too, especially if that's where the dollars are going. And that's, I think, the biggest adjustment for college football coaches generally. And then Ryan Day has been making them specifically. I just think that they have to go hand in hand. And he's putting in the effort, I think, to make sure that he's got really good players, which is not just as simple as being a very good recruiter anymore.
It is not. You are, as a head coach, you are a fundraiser. And like that was always part of the gig, right? But this has taken on a different tone, I think. And it's not, you know, just going out there and shaking the hat and asking for money, right? It's like you said, like, it's just sort of being present. And I, like, Ohio State fans have always had a really strong connection to the program. And there's always been a financial component of this too, right? Like, people pay for season tickets and have donated to the program in other ways in the past. This is just like a new thing that I don't know that a lot of people are 100% comfortable with, but I think almost everyone who's an Ohio State fan sort of understands that it is table stakes at the moment. And that'll change, I think, eventually. But for now, it still needs to be funded by outside operations or outside donations, excuse me. And Ryan Day needs to be out front and not, again, not begging for the money necessarily, but just being present, being available, being accessible in a way that makes people feel comfortable about, you know, opening up their checkbooks, unfortunately, to help Ohio State put its roster together. And that's not unique to Ohio State. That happens everywhere. It's just, I think it feels a little different here because Ohio State is going about its business a little differently the last couple of years. So I think it's great. And it's not, I think there's always a layer of, or there's always something to do with NIL sort of under the surface of all this. It doesn't have to be like so obvious as like hosting something like the lift they're doing at St. John or some of the other events they've had, right? It's just a way to strengthen that connection between the fan base and the players and the coaches that I think just sort of organically, if you're able to do that without asking for it, people will be more willing to kind of give Ohio State the help that it needs.
I think this Friday night lift, and it goes back to the first two practices of training camp in August, where Ohio State organized with the collective groups to let fans in. I think we did the napkin math. It was like 1,000 tickets or so and $30 a piece. Like, well, that's a pretty easy way to fill the coffers. Is it enough to pay for Jeremiah Smith all by itself? No, I don't think it probably is. But when we go back a year and a half or more, and that signing day 2 years ago, I'm just, for whatever reason, this conversation always sticks in my mind. You, me, and Berm, it was like, Ohio State doesn't have the NIL support. They're not being aggressive enough. And maybe I was being too optimistic for the Buckeyes, but like, I felt like once the rules were established, they were not going to be the ones that were going to go out and set the tone. Mm-hmm. But once they figured out what they could do, and they were going to execute it better than anybody else, I still think that there's more potential. The lift is one more that they could add to this. I think in spring ball, especially, they should probably all be open and they could have 15 practices in the horseshoe. And I bet that there would be some level of attendance in all of them. Now, I can understand the reticence to do that. They don't want, you know, videos of every practice out there for their opponents to break down. I certainly understand that there's going to have to be some pulling back on that. But the moment that I thought it really changed for me was those first two practices in August. Like, Ohio State has found an edge, an easy way to execute, and an easy way to bring in a lot of money in one fell swoop. And that is a lot of intelligent people at Ohio State. And it is also a very competitive Ryan Day, who frankly does not want to risk falling behind in battles against the likes of like Miami or Michigan State, like that were just dropping bags of cash and hoping that was going to work. Now, that's not sustainable for those schools, but guess what is sustainable for Ohio State? Doing events like this and fundraising at the snap of a finger. So the competitiveness of Ryan Day and the intelligence of him surrounding himself with a school that is not going to give up on being at the forefront of college football specifically, but college athletics again generally, but the profit is coming from football. Like, I did have faith that they were eventually going to start doing things like this and then do it better than anybody else. And again, I don't cover all the other programs in the country. I don't think that there's many that are right now finding this edge that does not rely solely on two or three or four mega boosters. And I that's what I thought was going to happen for them. And I think it's refreshing for the Buckeyes that they're proving that correct.
I think the best way to gauge whether or not they're doing it well and doing it in a way that, I don't know, I guess makes the rest of college football nervous is like the reaction to the offseason, right? It's like Ohio State was treated like Ole Miss bringing in 30 something transfers. Like they brought in six, but they were six really good ones, right? And they're more calculated about it. They're not taking desperate swings necessarily. I mean, like keeping their roster intact was part of that too, but it's like those guys were already here. So that was a little bit funny to me, but that's when it like kind of clicked for me too. It's like, okay, if people are out there either directly voicing concerns or like using people in the media to voice their concerns or their awareness, at the very least, of what's happening with Ohio State and its ability to put its roster together this offseason, that means they're probably doing something right. Right. So I probably would be lying if I said that 2 years ago, I thought they would have it figured out this well, this quickly, but they have. Like, I don't know that I have really any concerns with what they're doing now. And maybe that's naive because I think the biggest thing here is showing an ability to do it off season after off season, right? Not just do it once, but it also becomes a little bit of a perpetuating cycle. I think like, because we were doing Kings of Columbus earlier this week, we were talking about Georgia, and Byrne made this point too. It's like, and I'm not comparing what Georgia did at the start of Kirby's tenure to what Ohio State is doing now, but like Georgia really pushed the envelope and putting its roster together, if you know what I mean, at the beginning of Kirby Smart's tenure. And I don't think they had to do that as much now because they're winning, right? And Ohio State's always been a winning program, but Ryan Day hasn't yet won a national championship. And I think once that happens, and it very well could happen this year, that maybe they won't have to be maybe they want to spend as much money maybe like in subsequent off seasons to keep the roster together, but they had to get to the point where they could demonstrate an ability to like to sort of do whatever it takes to get their roster in the best shape possible. And they've certainly done that lately this past year. So I don't have any concerns. Whatever was there when this all started and Ohio State seemed to be lagging behind and Ryan Day was having press conferences that bordered on like, I don't know, depressing because it just seemed like Ohio State wasn't going to be able to put its best foot forward. I think they're obviously in a much better spot now and will be moving forward.
Yeah. So about that roster specifically, there wasn't a ton to glean. But part of that was because Ryan Day was saying, hey, maybe in the next week or two, it'll actually be finalized. So, you know, we know we've talked about it throughout the week. Been a couple options at safety in the transfer portal. They had just were involved with a punter and added that to the group last week. So they're not closing the door here, Bill, on the transfer portal, but it seem like most of the work is done and they're maybe just waiting on one decision, possibly two.
Yeah. I'll be curious too, if they, cause we saw them at the preferred walk-on Sean Lodge we talked about the other day, like maybe there's another move or two like that. That's sort of on the periphery that is more about depth and practice. Although if Sean Lodge like ended up being part of the special teams, I guess I wouldn't be terribly surprised by that, but I don't know that I'm anticipating anything major. I know they are taking some swings here at safety. We'll see what shakes out from that, but yeah, I think it's largely settled. I don't think there's anything that's going to happen that's going to change what I expect the starting lineup to be right by the time the first game comes around, but yeah, they could still add a guy or two.
Yeah. That would be a third safety at best, when what we're talking about here, which does remind me, like one of the things that like most got my attention and had me scribbling down in the notebook, you know, as we do during those real press conferences, like he was going through the guys who returned. And he was like, Jordan Hancock, I think he's like the most underrated guy on this defense. I'm like, not on the podcast daily. What do you this? You're listening to the wrong stuff, bud. But yeah, it does like reinforce it because we do also spend a lot of time three linebacker, Sonny Styles and CJ Hicks. How's that work? And then I say, no, don't do it because Jordan Hancock can't come off the field. Like, or who's going to back him up at safety? It's like these or at nickel. The appreciation for his decision to return, I think it does get overlooked in the way that he's not, you know, 3 year contributor, multi-year starter. Like if he's not Jack Sawyer, he's not Denzel Burke in terms of the length of the resume and the amount of snaps he's played, but like, boy, inside the Woody, that appreciation is fully realized for Jordan Hancock. And I every once in a while, I do like hearing that from somebody else. It's like, he is as important as I keep saying he is.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I think Jim Knowles did a pretty good job of reminding us that last year, reminding us of that last year. But even then, it still does seem to tend to fly under the radar. I don't know why. Jordan's like a pretty quiet guy, I guess, right? He's not one that's necessarily put himself out there. And while he's a very thoughtful guy when we talk to him, I don't know that he's saying things or grab a lot of headlines either in the way that Denzel Burke does, right? So, but he's incredibly important. I could maybe make an argument that he's the most important player on the defense, but maybe that's just my own personal biases seeping in, because I think a lot of him as a player, to the point where, like, I think I said that, maybe I've said this before, like toward the end of last year, I was like, there's no way that guy's coming back. I know he's only been starting for 1 year, but he's so good at such an important position in the NFL that I think he's gone. So to have him back is incredible. Not that I thought that Ohio State, you know, was overlooking that. I know they understand the importance of that, but again, it is nice to be reminded of just how pivotal he is to what Ohio State's doing.
I think even we do that even when we're talking about, well, Jermaine Matthews could play some nickel. He can back him up, or like the other guys that we speculate. It's like, and Ryan Day did talk about this as well on Wednesday. It's like 16 games, going to play depth, learned that from last year, going to have to play more depth. They've been beating that drum, you know, privately and publicly pretty loudly. But it's like, we just skip past it. It's like, Jordan Hancock's going to play like 70% of the significant relevant snaps next year. Like, yes, it would be great to find other ways to get Jermaine Matthews and Lorenzo Styles and all these other guys like more snaps, but I don't think anybody really wants that to come at the expense of Jordan Hancock, or at least I don't.
Nor do I. I think I would like to see Jermaine Matthews get in there and play some nickel in some high leverage moments, just to see what that looks like outside of a spring game, because of how good it looked during the spring game. I just want to, I guess, like confirm that further if possible, to see whether or not he could be the guy after Jordan Hancock leaves. But those guys will get opportunities to play. Right? I think this season, different from last year, is going to have quite a few games where things are out of hand and you can play some of those guys more. I'm going through this exercise on Rivals, like writing about what the freshmen did last year, and like they just didn't play a lot because there weren't a lot of those games. And I know we're not talking specifically about freshmen when we talk about Jermaine Matthews and Lorenzo Styles, but just sort of guys generally who aren't full-time starters, I think are going to have many more opportunities to play this year. And it won't come at the expense of like the defensive stars or stars in general playing in the most important moments. But I do think maybe Ohio State staff might lean into the opportunities to play that depth a little more, even if, like, you know, it doesn't have to be 49-0 to play Jermaine Matthews at nickel. Maybe it's like, you know, we're up by 3 touchdowns in the second quarter. Let's do this kind of thing. I'm not necessarily fearful of Jordan Hancock not being out there when he needs to be. I believe that he will be.
Yeah, Ryan Day, he got to that point that you're making as well about getting guys. It's not just for the future that he thinks that they could maybe do that better, but also like when injuries strike over the course of a year, which happens every year without fail. There's nothing that you can do about it. There's no program that's going to be immune to it. So he referenced that on a couple occasions. Again, that was on 97.1 The Fan on Wednesday with those couple shows there. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to him and the coaching staff soon, but either way, Bill and I are going to get into some of that freshman usage projection that he talked about. You can read that, his work at ohiostate.rivals.com, but we'll also talk about it here in the coming days and weeks on the podcast daily. Not right now, though. We're out of time on a Thursday edition of the show. We only have so much bandwidth that we can give to you all, and we got to save something because, as a reminder, it's the middle of May. Thanks for joining us for part of your day here, this Thursday edition of the podcast daily. He's Bill. I'm Austin. We'll talk to you later.